Hello, and welcome to this Millennial 2018 episode with the illustrious Sargon of Akkad. Welcome to Hello. Now, before we begin, I want to emphasize that Sargon and I are not politically aligned. We are certainly not politically identical, very far from it. I want to make that very clear for any people who would try to create trouble for Sargon for agreeing to appear on my channel. So it is a necessary disclaimer. Sargon, is there anything you want to pop in?
Just to before we move on from that, I just want to explain, because people can say, why are you on Millennial Woes' podcast? Well, to be honest with you, it's kind of a tradition at this point, because I've spoken to Millennial Woes many times, because I don't think that every person who is in the alt-right is a bad person. And I think that if we cast these people out and never talk to them, then we can never try and persuade them that maybe they have the wrong ideas. And that's why Colin began with, we know we disagree, because we've had lots of disagreements in the past. But we're not going to be focusing specifically on those disagreements this time, I imagine. We're just going to be talking as two people who are content creators on the internet who have two different perspectives. And I think that's going to be an interesting conversation. And to be honest with you, I'm also doing it to deliberately flout this kind of shaming and guilt by association culture that the left is pushing. I'm very, very tired of it, and I've never bowed to it before. It's particularly strong and intense at the moment, but I have no intention of bowing to it now. I am a liberal. Everyone knows that. Colin is a white nationalist, I think is fair to say, and everyone knows that. And everyone knows that we don't agree on that subject.
I'm an ethno-nationalist. I would describe myself
an ethno-nationalist.
Anyway, go on.
Yeah, but that's how we're going to continue the conversation in the acknowledgement that we disagree on that subject. So, I'm sorry that I had to do that, but you know what the situation's like at the moment. The environment is unbelievable, frankly, as a content creator. It's like... Everyone is being subjected to a level of scrutiny that is deeply unfair. I mean, have you seen that Gavin McInnes has been unpersoned today?
Yes, I thought it's just very disturbing. And it seems to me that he now has literally no platform on the internet. He lost his YouTube channel, is that correct?
Yeah, that was something to do with copyright strikes, because CRTV, The Blaze bought it or something. I don't really follow these kind of, you know, conservative media outlets very much. But The Blaze bought it, apparently, and Glenn Beck owns The Blaze. And they just fired him and then copyright striked his YouTube channel off the internet. So now, as far as I'm aware, he doesn't have anything. I guess he should probably open up an account on Gab, Minds, and BitChute, because that's the only place that you can go. You know, set up a Subscribestar.
It's
been a wild week, isn't it?
It certainly has. It's been a wild, like, the last 2 or 3 months has just been incredible. And I don't really know what to say about it other than it's... I hope that we can find a way through it. There does seem to be hope in the shape of, you know, using companies from, you know, China and Russia and that kind of thing. I do think that it looks like, for now at least, Silicon Valley is out of reach and has gone into a very sort of ideological lockdown.
Yeah, sort of bunker mentality, isn't it? Where they're all just like, you know what, we're all just going to agree and then fuck everyone. Just fuck everyone. I think they've realized that they've got to the point where they don't actually have to do what other people say. And if they all just sort of like protect one another, then they think they're going to make it through it. And I think this is like in the last video I did about the Patreon deplatforming, I deliberately included clips from Jack Conte and Tim Cook of Apple, where Jack Conte was saying how all of the CEOs of Silicon Valley, when you achieve the status of like big tech, you seem to get let into some kind of club that is very progressive and very, in a way, I would say, messianic, because these people are actively, they think they can save the world, and they think that their tech corporations have the power to do it. And as Tim Cook said, it's sinful to allow a diversity of opinions on his platform. In paraphrasing what he said, of course, but that's the message that he was putting across. He considered it to be a sin. As if he was a Catholic preacher, and he sounded like a preacher at a pulpit, saying this is the moral good that we're going to pursue and no one can tell us otherwise. I said, okay, well, I'm fine with that. I would be completely fine with that if you didn't then also attack alternative tech, like Gab, for example. Gab had there was no legitimacy to deplatforming Gab. And the various, like BitChute being banned from Patreon for an irrelevant and not, like, again, another unfair reason. They said they didn't have any terms of service against violence. That's not true. BitChute had that. And they presented it and they said, look, we've had this for ages. What are you talking about? But it didn't matter, and Patreon just shut down.
Everyone knows what's going on. These big companies are simply colluding to shut down and eliminate their rivals so that there is no alternative. And so the only, like, basically, if you want to be a content creator and live off that, which is a perfectly legitimate thing to do, by the way. I mean, some people are now saying, well, you shouldn't be able to live off YouTube. So that is just retarded.
Why?
But anyway, I know it's a silly thing to say, but I've heard it said. Mm-hmm. If you want to make that decision, if you want to live off your creative work, then I think the situation is being made such that you can do it, but only if your creative work is either completely anodyne or it's politically progressive. And it's not enough to be even centrist. You have to be actively on board with the progressive agenda. And if you question it, if you question the progressive agenda, even just questioning it is enough. Perhaps because of the apostate thing, maybe they want to sort of make an example of people who dare to stray. I mean, I've been watching some videos recently. I haven't watched this new series of Doctor Who, but I couldn't bring myself to do it. But I have watched videos by fans who are turning against it. Which it fascinates me because it's too progressive even for them. So they're backing out. They're sort of overdosing on it. And now they're putting up these videos on YouTube moaning about it and using the NPC meme as well, which was interesting to me. But the point is that they are now probably in danger because they are ideological traitors. They're apostates from that creed. But anyway, we'll see how that goes. The point
There's loads to that, though. Like on Twitter, you can now be banned for misnaming or dead naming a trans person, which is very interesting. I mean, that's a level of very specific progressive control. Like, because I mean, with a lot of other things, like maybe hate speech or something like that, you could argue that it's not just one ideology that wants that. So it's not just you could argue that maybe it's, you know, but with like trans pronouns, it's just the intersectional types that give a shit about that. That's a very demonstrable result of intersectionality. And like, I mean, I remember in 2015 we were talking and you would say, it's not just going to be the alt-right. They'll come for the centrists too. And I was never in any doubt. I'm sure that I would have said, yes, I know, they're going to eventually come for the centrists. And ironically, I think they're coming for the centrists more intensely than the alt-right. Or maybe it's just because the fringes of the alt-right, the loud voices, have already been silenced at this point. But, like, I think your channel is in more danger from me being on here. Your Patreon's in more danger from me being here, probably. You know?
Probably.
Like, it's ridiculous. And I think you're right. It's not just that you're not on board with. I think it's anyone that they perceive to be a threat to the, like, political correctness itself is the problem, you know? Like, so I think like someone like, maybe not Jared Taylor, but like someone polite from the alt-right could probably do it unless they were prominent, and then that would be it. You know, they would just, they has to be chopped off.
Yeah, as soon as you're prominent, that's it. I mean, you know, as I discovered on Twitter a few months ago, It doesn't even matter what you say or what you do. It's who you are and what you represent. But yeah, I think that, as you say, I mean, I would be scared to host, I don't know, Alex Jones or something like that. But, you know, and obviously that's pie in the sky, but I would be scared to do that. Or even Gavin McInnes, because it's like, okay, that person's now a pariah. If you associate with them, God knows what's going to happen to you. I mean, this is a crazy, this is insane.
It's a legitimately
Stalin-esque. It's Stalin-esque,
You know, and not just Stalin, you know, like Nazi-esque, and, you know, like, this is the sort of thing fascists actually do. You know, it's the point is to weaken everyone, to make sure that they don't step out of line, to make sure they are easily controlled. And everyone can see it. Everyone can see that this is happening. And then, you know, people are like, oh, why are you going to talk to Melania Wise? Well, because I'm tired of not being able to talk to people if I want to talk to them. You know, I'm tired of, like, this, the feeling of fear about it. It's like, well, I guess I'll just take the punches, you know. I'll get deplatformed from Patreon, even though I never broke the terms of service. And despite everyone pointing out, hey, he didn't actually break the terms of service, Patreon don't give a shit. And it's wild how much, like, I mean, you know, I was making quite a lot of money. I mean, it hurts to lose it, obviously. But what amazes me is that Patreon as a business, just like, you know what, we don't care. Milo would have brought in tens of thousands of dollars, undoubtedly. You know, like, who else was deplatformed recently? Someone else that was deplatformed.
Well, James Elsop was deplatformed.
Yeah, he probably had a decent sized Patreon as well. You know, up until that point, white nationalism on Patreon was fine, but after that, no more. Well, why? What's changed? You know, what's the cornerstone there? Like, you know, and like I said, I'm not supporting white nationalism, obviously, but there are going to be
white nationalists have been deplatformed from Patreon for years. I mean, that is, he was one of the last. It's not, but of course, at this point,
Patreon. But then they move on to the centrists.
Yes, exactly. At this point, that's what's going on now. It's very strange because I really wonder, does it even occur to them that they are literally shutting down all possible debate? What we're going to be ending up with here on YouTube is just a bunch of progressives arguing about how to be even more progressive than they already are. Like a college campus, you know?
it's going to be like that. But more importantly, alt tech is just going to grow outside of Silicon Valley's shadow. You know, who is it? MasterCard came for someone's Patreon the other day as well.
MasterCard. See, they're another part of this. That doesn't get emphasized enough. They have, they instructed, I think it was Patreon a few months ago, to audit everyone who was on their website to make sure that they were all okay. But according to MasterCard's terms of service, so it's the payment processors who really are holding the keys here, I think.
Yeah, I think in many cases it is. But the thing with alt tech is, like, Andrew Tauber went through the fire. You know, I mean, Andrew Tauber's an edgy shit poster too, but he's not like, you know, he's a conservative, you know, a libertarian, and he's pro free speech, and he's very ideologically pro free speech. Many ways the same I am. And that's in my, you know, fine. There's nothing wrong with that because, I mean, that's my opinion. So I agree with him, but he's been through the fire just because someone else used his platform, a public platform anyone can use, but YouTube never gets the same treatment, obviously. And so he had to find another host after all of these other hosts were deplatforming because it's a cascade effect of one person doing it. Oh, we're all going to do it now. But eventually he got Gab back online and now he's building a payment processor for Gab. And when whatever ends of that payment processor eventually go, oh no, God, we can't do this. Oh, for whatever reason, like he's going to have to, or someone is going to start setting up the back end. So you've got like an entire industry that's built for people who have been censored from the mainstream. And it's just like, that's nuts. That's absolutely nuts. If you can't see how bad the censorship is when a separate fucking industry has to be built, you're blind. You know, or you're taking advantage of this because you want it this way. And if you want it this way, then you're doing this deliberately. You're hurting people. You're deliberately being a censor. You're effectively like admitting you're a tyrant. And it's like,
I think they do, actually. A lot of progressives will, SJWs and so on Twitter, everywhere, will mock someone when they get deplatformed because they enjoy it. They like seeing someone get deplatformed. Yeah. I love your tears and all this kind of stuff. They're mocking someone who's been, I don't know, how, I mean, how sick do you have to be? You're mocking someone who's lost their, whether it's their voice in the public square or it's their income, their livelihood. Come on. Are ideological disagreements really so intense? Does it really mean so much to you that it devalues somebody's...
essential humanity.
Yeah.
You know, you're impersonating that person. You know, why... I would never think to presume to have the authority to unperson someone. You know, I don't think that I'm smart enough or wise enough or sensible enough, or, you know, I deserve to be the person making decisions about who can't speak. You know, that's sort of thing I would want a legislative process for. You know, I wouldn't just want some arbitrary, like someone at Twitter, oh, I don't like that, shut it down. You know, no, I can't, I don't like that. I mean, I want some kind of Bill of Rights on this, you know. I think that we should have some sort of legal protection at this point because it is people's livelihoods and it's not getting smaller. You know, the internet isn't becoming, it's not a shrinking trend. You know, in 50 years' time, who won't make their money on the internet? You know, that's the internet will be everything. You know, it's going to be the primary method of communication going forward for all of humankind for the foreseeable future. I think we probably would be smart to write ourselves some bill of rights to prevent them from fucking us like they're doing right now. You know, and I'm speaking to someone who has just been robbed of $12,000 a month not by my patrons, not by the market, not because people say, oh, actually, your content sucks, we're not going to support you. Oh, no, I'd like 3,500 fucking patrons. You know, like, it's been done by Jack Conte and it is an executive decision just because he could. And I think that's unacceptable. So,
Yeah, absolutely. I couldn't agree more. I agree with every single word you said there. We absolutely do need a Bill of Rights. But of course, I mean, there is the SMACA proposal. I don't know if you're aware of that. There was the Protecting Online Digital Speech, Digital Free Speech, whatever it was called, that proposal as well, which got a lot of signatures. Mm-hmm. There was a petition in favour of that. But as yet, it looks like Trump isn't, I haven't seen any moves from it. And the thing is, as I've said before, it does have to be Trump, because our own politicians, not only are they not on this issue, they actually want even more censorship in Britain. I mean, it's just astounding. These people are amazing. Their arrogance. Because I think that something that they don't understand is that, well, the internet afforded us this freedom to have conversations and say things in a way that's much less hampered than everyday conversation in real life. And so we got used to this idea that you can say anything and shitpost and you might mean it, you might not, whatever. It might be extreme, it might not, it might be radical, it might not. But everyone has sort of had an open mind. And that was how it was at a certain point in the internet's history and in YouTube's history. It was not like real life. It was not like the physical world where we all understand that there are certain things you've got to have some discretion. On the internet, you could say anything. And now that has that Wild West thing that people talk about. It is in the process of being homogenized and, well, basically eliminated.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And the thing is, everyone knew it was coming. You know, everyone has been predicting it for years, because they've been making moves in this direction for years. And then Google releases, what was it, the good censor? And I'm just like, hey, dude, that's like the Stalinists going, well, the good famine, you know, censoring people's, ideas is going to create a famine in the world of ideas. You know, it's going to create this kind of dearth of interesting content. And then the people who have been censored are going to go to alt tech. And then the people who want to hear interesting things are going to go listen to them on alt tech. And thankfully, eventually Silicon Valley is going to die. But in the meantime, how many people are going to get hurt? You know, how many people's livelihoods are going to be ruined? How many people's voices in the public square are going to be censored? I don't want to actually destroy Silicon Valley. I just want them to change. I want them to stop being like this. They are not the saviors of the world, and they really need to get that into their heads.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. It's a scary situation just now, for sure. I mean, every so often a new platform does emerge. I mean, I think you were on Maker Support, and it got attacked. Mm-hmm. There was also Patreon.
Great example.
Yeah, and Patreon as well before that. But Maker Support, I thought, was really that really saddened me, because it was a damn good website, and I liked the name, I liked the design, it worked well. It was just a good thing, and then they, you know, this is it, right? It's the cliche.
Well, Stripe specifically deplatformed it, and then the guy started just taking money without having the payment processor. And I think a lot of people are angry at him because of what he did. And I understand they should be, obviously. But I think it's important to remember, I think it was some 20-year-old kid or something, and he got kind of scared, and he didn't know what to do.
Yeah, he was overwhelmed. I mean, I spoke to him. He was not trying to defraud anyone. What he was bad at was communication. People need to know what is going on. And that, unfortunately, didn't happen in that case. But
he had a large number of people like messaging him all at once and things like this. And, you know, I mean, we're used to that. We deal with that all the time. But if you're not used to that, that can be very intimidating. So, you know, I would like to give him the benefit of the doubt on that one.
Oh, as far as I could see, he was innocent. He just didn't.
But he should definitely stop taking payments on the site.
Oh yeah. Well, I suppose the bigger issue is the Internet Bill of Rights. I think that, as I was going to say earlier, was that we need to push American politicians. And I know that as a British person, it's cheeky for me to say that, but unfortunately, the internet is in the hands of American corporations and ultimately the American government, even still today. So they are the ones who can affect this. And right now, I think Trump is the only man on earth who could do this, because I think the Democrats will have absolutely no interest in doing this. So
they're the ones who are causing the problems.
exactly. So if they get in next time in 2020, that's it over. We're going to have to rely on China and Russia. But in the end...
Which is not a great idea, really, is it?
No.
I don't think they're very pro-free speech themselves. So,
No, exactly. But it would be... well, we would then be colluding with the Russians, who are colluding to do God knows
who,
what.
But who knows how much worse it could get? Like that, yes, that, I mean, like, once you've accepted that as a premise, that us just using their software is us colluding with them, and you know they'll try and make that leap, then suddenly we're traitors. And, like, I watched Theresa May's statement today, and they literally, she's like, what was it? Does this House, in the House of Commons, does this House want to deliver Brexit or not? And a bunch of them went, no! And she just started smirking, and I'm just like, right, okay, so these people who are going to go back on the referendum will eventually end up declaring us, the people who, like, want freedom and independence, to be traitors to the country. Man, we're fucked. We're in so much trouble.
I know. That is not something to smirk about. For her to... I mean, that shows the attitude is all that is this detached, oh, how funny it is. you're a traitor. You're a bloody traitor to your people. And it's a disgrace. But we've seen, that's another issue entirely. I mean, if you want to move on from the freedom of speech thing and the deep platform,
I think we've pretty much pummeled it into the ground. Like, I think that Patreon is directly in the wrong.
Go on.
I think they're directly in the wrong. They know that they banned me for no good reason. Gavin McKinnon has just been erased from the internet, like Alex Jones was, like various other people are. It's got to stop, man. It's got to stop. So, but yeah, what subject would you like to go to next?
Indeed. Well, let's just, as you suggested, let's talk about the year in review. 2018 has been quite a year in Britain. So what would you like to take it away with?
I don't know. Let's have a quick... what I'm going to do is just on Google. I'm just going to go through like the most popular news items within like the month of January. So,
I mean, I think that the salient thing is that you have sort of transitioned to a certain extent from the internet into... IRL demos and stuff like that.
Oh yeah, I mean, I was out on one yesterday. That went really well, by the way. For anyone curious, the media narrative that's currently going around is total nonsense. It's actually the direct inverse of reality. Owen Jones, while he was there, I was there, by the way. While he was there,
can we just describe first what the demo was? Because
the demo was a Brexit demo, obviously. It was a pro Brexit rally that we were doing called Brexit Betrayal Rally, because we feel that Brexit is being betrayed, which it is. And we got a bunch of speakers from UKIP and you know, like other non UKIP speakers there as well. And we got a big crowd out. There were over at least 5,000 people. I would say probably around 6,000 or 7,000. But let's go the smaller figure of 5,000. But it was definitely, I mean, I'm going to put a video up after this hangout. In fact, I'm going to finish editing it with footage that I took from the stage. So you can see how many rows back and how wide the crowd is, like filling the entire great, was it Whitehall? The street, how wide it is. You know, it's got the cenotaphs in the middle and stuff like this. And there's two roads on either side. It's very wide street, and it's just packed in this great square of people. You know, all waving flags, dozens and dozens of flags. It's amazing, and you can hear them just yelling sort of like "Brexit means exit," and it's like, yes, that's exactly right, and it's really loud. And then today they were laughing about this in Parliament, but
David Lammy saying that the right wingers were outnumbered 5-1 by left wingers.
Total nonsense. I mean, there are about 200 left wingers there. Like there is aerial footage of the left wingers. Like someone took some cell phone footage from like a roof or you know a window up high, and you can see them. There must be about 200 of them. They don't even fill the street. They don't even fill the street, and it's just like, you know, there's a blob of them at the side, and then it just peters out into, and it's just like about 200 of them on the screen. You're thinking, that is nothing. And guess who ended up getting into fights with the cops and getting arrested? Wasn't the UKIP Brexiteers. No, it was the Antifa types. But three of them got arrested. And it's just like, there was no conflict. There was no conflict between us. You know, it is always them. It is, they come for a fight. And like people are like, well, the DFLA do as well. No, the DFLA are prepared to stand up to these people, but they're not coming to be violent. And we know this because what happened yesterday, the two sides were separated by like, you know, probably like 100 meters and then barriers with cops at either side, which fantastic, you know, absolutely fantastic. The cops did a great job, you know, and I'm actually starting to know a few of the cops who are there regularly because I've been to like three or four of these now. And it's the same cops who work in the same area. And, you know, you just asked me, how's it going? And I was like, yeah, everything's going great. You know, is there any trouble? No, there's no trouble, or at least not over here. And it's like, well, fantastic, you know. And it feels like a family day out. Like I'll show footage of the march arriving, so you can just see the raw numbers of people. And it's like It's families. It's just working class families from the north where, you know, like people in wheelchairs and stuff. There's a guide dog and stuff like this. And it's just like, this is not a dangerous rally. But on the other side, you've got communists scrapping with the police trying to get at us. And it's just like, and Owen Jones is there going, yeah, we're outnumbering them 5-1. And they're the ones starting the violence. It's like, oh, and there wasn't any violence because you couldn't get to us. You fucking liars. All right, you are just lying. And then all of the headlines like Momentum have said that they outnumbered them 5-1. Pfft, gives a fuck about Momentum's lies, you know, open lies. And so I'll have that video up after this, probably about an hour after this, because I've got all the footage because I was there. I was on the stage, you know. So it's just like, fuck you guys. It's been really, really productive, really productive. And not even like in any one particular ideological direction, really, just for everyone opposed to the sort of like globalist progressive consensus, you know, everyone who's not for hate speech laws, everyone who's not for open borders, anyone on that side, this Brexit rally was a great victory, you know, and this does actually include like socialists, you know, the sort of old Tony Benn style socialists. They would have been welcome there, absolutely. You know, like Jonathan Pye was there, you know, and a few, like there were people who weren't just UKIPers and stuff like this, and it was just regular folks, you know, it was just regular people who were just annoyed that Brexit was betrayed. It wasn't any one thing, which is great, really.
Yeah, I think a lot of ordinary people are annoyed. Even people who weren't pro-Brexit are annoyed at what's happening now with the treatment of the handling of Brexit by Treason May, as I've seen her called. I thought that was quite amusing.
I call her that myself.
It's very good.
She deserves it.
Well, yeah, but it is. It's just, what's the word, a miscarriage of, I don't know what the word would be, but it basically amounts to treason or treachery, let's say.
Well, I don't know how else to describe it. I mean, like, what is it when the government starts handing away the sovereignty of your country? Like, what do you call that? You know, becoming a vassal of another state. Why would you do that?
And they're desperate to do it as well. I mean, they're committed to doing it. It's not like something that might happen or might not. They are determined to sell Britain out to the EU at any cost in whatever way that they can possibly manage to do it.
No, but it's true. It sounds ridiculous. Like, really, your government, the people you've elected, you know, you become the prime minister. The first thing you do is do everything you can to bow and bend the knee to someone on the same level, or not even on the same level as you, you know, like, really, should be lower. Look, the EU has far fewer powers than an actual state has, but they're trying to get them, and it's just like, why are you giving them that? Like, just, and then when it comes to the negotiation, she just hands off more power, so we end up, or would have been, apart from, there were things today that they brought through that aren't going to pass, the EU won't agree, but essentially what they were trying to do is give the European Union the deciding power on the backstop and things like this, and it's just like, why
it's amazing. It's as if they have absolutely no faith in Britain at all. Like, they don't see it as something that is strong or should be strong or ever could be strong. So it's just something that's got to be basically dismantled as quickly and quietly as possible. That seems to be their attitude. So that in the end, it'll just be a theme park vassal state, a sort of adjunct, a node of the EU. But the EU is where the power is at and where the fascination of our politicians is focused, when it really should be focused on the government of Britain and indeed the culture, identity, heritage, etc. of Britain. But they seem to have no interest in it, no fondness for it, and certainly no loyalty to it. And I think that you've seen that coming through like now in the last year or so since the Brexit referendum. What might have been a dark suspicion in some people has become hideously confirmed by the behaviour of our politicians in real time.
Well, I agree. And the thing is, right, I don't even want the government to even necessarily go as far as to be like interested or focused on ideology or heritage or anything like that. Like, that, you know, I mean, that's something that we the people can do. You know, we're the producers of culture and society. So we can do all that. And then if we're just left to be the people we want to be, then that's going to be the natural product of our society anyway. So we don't even, I just want the government to just stop trying to sell the country out at this point. Like, I don't even want them to do anything. Just stop ruining things. You know, stop further giving what we have away. I'm tired of it. And I don't see why I shouldn't want our country to exist. It's crazy. Why should I not want that?
Yeah, exactly. That's what it comes to in the end, is why you love your country. Well, I mean, most people do. It's not that bizarre or perverse a thing to do. It's to have, you know, loyalty, faith in your country. But that now is being treated as something, well, perverse and silly and old-fashioned and outmoded. But, you know, it's not. It just isn't, because we still live in countries. Yes, there's a big global culture and a Western culture and so on. Yes, that is true. And the internet has created this new thing and all that. But it's still the case that there is a British person who knows the, you know, the red phone boxes and the whatever, who goes to that shop and that knows those phrases and has watched that TV show, etc., etc. The culture is still there. And so that is what people are. And of course, the people are going to have fondness for it and loyalty towards it. And they're going to want it to survive, and they're going to want it to be as healthy and good as possible. They don't want it to become just another part of the EU. But because really, how many people have, well, I was going to say how many people have love and fondness and for the EU, but then I remembered not only the politicians do, but also these fucking Guardian reading, these FBPE, FBPE nutters, these people who are obsessed with it. I mean, they're fanatically, I just don't understand. I don't understand. For us, yeah, okay, we've got to accept that they do have this love and loyalty for the EU, but then try to understand why they do it, why they feel like this about the EU, and it's just utterly baffling. I mean, what is there to love about this hideous institution?
Well, listen, I've been really thinking about this a lot, right? And because I've been to a bunch of the anti-Brexit marches, and they're the same sort of people who go to the anti-Trump marches and stuff like this, and like they've got a kind of homogeneity about their ideas. And one of the things that I've noticed is a lot of them think that we're literally going to be cut off from Europe if we leave the European Union. And I'm just like, we will be able to go to France if for some reason you wanted to go to France. You know, don't go to Paris at the moment, but like, you know, maybe Marseille or something like that. You know, you will be able to travel to Germany. Again, don't go to like Berlin or something, you know, go to, I don't know, Munich or something. But like, you know, we can still go to Europe. We're just not going to be governed by Brussels. That seems like a good thing to me. That just seems an all-round good. Like,
and there is this conflation of the EU and Europe, which is, I think, is very pernicious and misleading. But they do it in there. They do it, like the politicians will do that, and then people will absorb that as, oh yes, people, Brexiteers are anti-Europe, and they just don't like Europe, and all. It's rubbish. It's just total silly. Nonsense.
And that's why they can't explain the, like, I mean, I'm going to call it the nationalist coalition across Europe, but like, again...
The international nationalist. It's not a contradiction. It's silly for people to pretend that it is.
Yeah, honestly, it's like saying, well, this is what I've been saying about a collection of individualists. You can have a group of individualists. That's not a contradiction. And it's not a contradiction to have an international coalition of nationalists. These are just a group of people with a shared interest in preserving the existence of their nation in the face of an active attempt to erase the existence of their nation. And it's not like the European Union isn't saying, give us sovereignty. I mean, like, there are so many clips of Guy Verhofstadt in the parliament going, well, this would only work if you give us all the sovereignty, you know, that sort of thing. And it's just like, all sovereignty to the European Union. And it's like, okay, there we go. There we go. You're trying to erase the sovereign nations of Europe. I'm not having that. I don't want that. And that's what the International Coalition of Nationalists is just broadly in agreement on.
Yeah, absolutely. There was a super chat earlier. I was leaving the super chats for the end, here was a very interesting one. I'll just read it out. With protests in France, Belgium, Netherlands, and Germany, and populism in Austria, Hungary, Italy, and Poland, is the EU finished?
And Spain, remember? Andalusia.
Yes.
A populist party as well. You know, and these aren't Nazi parties or anything. These are just working class parties, basically. You know, UKIP-style parties, as far as I can tell. But, it's a genuine question, isn't it? You know, who knows?
I think at this point it does seem to be that, well, especially with the France thing, because I don't know if you know that they've given this list of demands. And yes, we can say that we don't know who sanctioned this list and all this, but the Yellow Jackets have issued several lists of demands. So one of them that seems to be the most widely shared one, they want to leave the EU, Frexit.
Good.
They want France out of the EU. And the thing is, if France leaves the EU, obviously that would, well, the EU would never be the same again. And I don't even think it would recover. It would just be Germany with a bunch of poor countries at that point.
Yes.
It would not be a German Empire. Well, yes, that would be the irony. But at this point, I don't think that would happen, actually. I think the EU would simply fall apart. I think it couldn't be sustained because it's not supposed to be anyone's empire, in theory. It's, well, maybe the globalist empire. It's supposed to be a globalist thing. It's supposed to be a universal thing with all these... and, of course, that's why Brexit itself is such a thorn in the side, because you can't have people leaving after this thing has started. That's not part of the game plan. But anyway, the point is that I think that if France did leave, if these yellow jackets, depends how far this goes, of course, in France, it might just peter out now and we never hear about it again. But I don't think so. I think it probably is the start of something. Because none of this stuff does actually seem to really finish once it starts. It seems to go from one thing. It seems to go from one strength to another over time. And so I think the yellow jackets thing will not, if it does dissipate, I mean, it can only... The momentum can only be sustained for so long at once. It will eventually peter out. But I think then that will be, this precedent will be set for future protests, and the techniques will be established as well. So I think it will just keep going. And I think that people would be naive to think that this is it, that it's going to be over. It will just peter out. I think it is the start of a new attitude. And I would expect that Marine Le Pen, or at least the Front National, or whatever they're calling themselves now, I can't remember the new name. I think they probably will win the next election especially if Marine Le Pen. What would you say about this? If the yellow jackets get what they want, do you think that France could actually leave the EU? And if they did, what do you think would happen?
I can't see it. I just can't see it. I mean, while there's probably a huge... I mean, I know there's a huge amount of resistance to Macron. I mean, he's got a 75% disapproval rating and, 21% approval rating, something like that. You know, it's not just it's two different things. So they obviously don't add up. But, he's massively more disliked. And I think with a deeper intensity to the dislike as well, I don't think his supporters have the same kind of level of intensity of love for him, like with Hillary Clinton, frankly. You know, none of her support felt genuine. It felt contrived in a feminist way. You know,
she's not a likable person. She's obviously corrupt.
No. Yeah, and she's not standing for people who are suffering either. That's the thing. You know, people who are struggling. And Macron's the same. I mean, they were calling him the president of the rich, which sounds very correct to me. I think he is. And that's why you've got both lefties, you know, socialists and populists coming out and saying, well, look, you know, this is not what we want at all. And so we are now, frankly, working together, and they've had no choice but to work together to oppose him. And it was like, well done, Macron. You're so unbelievably awful. You've polarized all of your enemies who hate each other, but they hate you more, you know, and you've done this to yourself with your Jupiterian presidency. But I can't see France leaving the EU, because that doesn't necessarily mean they're anti-Europe. I'm sure there are definitely elements in the yellow jackets that are Frexit and, you know, Godspeed. But I think, I mean, I'm not sure. So this is something I could, you know, I can be corrected on, obviously. Anything I can be corrected on, obviously. But like this in particular is something I can be corrected on. But I would suggest that, like, it's probably a minority of the yellow vests that are Frexiteers, and the rest just want a fairer deal, but they don't necessarily want to leave the European Union. And I think if France, I mean, like, I don't know if Britain's, like, if Britain just went hard Brexit tomorrow and refused to give them another penny, because we've still been paying them for 2 years, obviously, you know, but if we said, right, okay, not another penny, and good luck in the future, and actually just, you know, built a wall around Britain in addition to the moat, then...
Yeah, I was going to say, we shouldn't need a wall in theory, but it seems
to be... Yeah, I know, yeah, right. But in addition to the moat, and we become Fortress Britain, and we only trade as, like, you know, rogue free marketers who just set up, like, ultra-good trade deals with faraway nations and sit there at the edge of Europe, just, you know, peering over our battlements. Like, if we were to do something like that and essentially economically wage war with the European Union, we could probably beat it just by lowering our taxes beyond, you know, our corporation tax would completely slash, just encourage all of the investment to our country. And that would just drain slowly France and Germany, and that would suck for them, but there's not a lot they can do about it. And I think that we'd probably end up being able to effectively crumble it that way. But like, if France left, there's nothing like the Germans would have to pay for it all. You know, the Germans would have to pay for everything. And man, I can't see that happening. I mean, I can't see.
No, I mean, they're getting fucked as it is. Yeah. I don't think they want even more taxation and all the rest of it.
I can't believe they do. And like the French, like this is the point. Like a lot of this started over fuel prices. It's obviously not just about fuel prices. You know, it's obviously going way beyond that. And so everyone's bringing out the grievances of the culture of globalism and how
it's existential.
Yeah, it's existential. Great way of saying it. But the when Britain leaves, like. We were what, £8.5 billion net contributor? That was the net contribution we made. So now France and Germany and Italy, who are the three next biggest contributors, with Germany being the top, and we were second, they now have to, I mean, what, Germany's going to pay, what, $3 or $4 billion extra? France, one or two? Italy, one, maybe? You know, something like that? Like, how's that going to be divided? Okay, fuel tax rise, you can't afford the fuel. Well, I'm afraid that Britain's left, but we still need to maintain our empire. So you're going to have to raise your taxes anyway, or else the EU falls apart, and you don't want the EU to fall apart, do you? So, I mean, I think the EU is a really rickety structure, and I think it needs to really consider the legitimacy of it and its ability to survive the next couple of years, I think is...
Well, exactly. That's why I asked if you thought it could fall apart, because even though it does, that is an extreme thing to happen, it does seem to be on shaky ground now. And actually, I remember Farage saying in an interview about 2 years ago that he said that he thought that the EU wouldn't exist 15 years from then, so that's like 13 years from now. That was a prediction that he made, isn't it? What would you say about that?
Oh, I've been saying it for a while myself. I don't think it's gonna. I don't think it's got lasting power, and I think that it's all ideological. It's not inspirational. You know, when these people try and sound inspiring, they're bureaucrats, and so they sound kind of tyrannical. You know, they're like, yeah, we'll you know, when Guy Verhofstadt's like, oh, we'll build an empire of the good, and it's just like, dude, you know, that's really not a good advertisement. Like, let's build a good empire. Yeah, I'm sure it's gonna be great. You know, I mean, like with the cops and the militarized police that have been putting down the yellow vest protests, they've had the EU symbol on them as if they're an EU occupying force. And but that's what it's gonna look like. You know, if you want to know what it's gonna look like, there we go. They're just gonna have guns instead.
Yeah, and they won't have any loyalty to the people of whichever country they're operating in. They'll just go in and be very detached about it and carry out orders, no matter how ruthless, I would imagine.
I believe that they will. I believe that they will, because that's what the Europeans have been doing for hundreds and hundreds of years. So, you know, I don't look at it with optimism at all.
Well, no. I don't know what to say to that. I mean, I think things have to move forwards one way or another. Even if the process of moving forward is painful, at least you are getting somewhere. And yeah, I think the next few years are going to be awful. Well, the next 5 to 10 years are going to be very, very tumultuous. And not just in terms of Brexit and the EU, but also in terms of online and the culture and liberty. I mean, you know, you've been involved in this the last few years. You've seen Brittany Pettibone, Lauren Southern, Martin Selner being banned from Britain. You saw Tommy Robinson being imprisoned. Things are changing in Britain, aren't they? I mean, something in the air. Well, it's not just Britain, indeed.
No, like Australia, Gavin McInnes, he's a conservative. You know, he was banned from Australia. And a bunch of other people, Tommy, I think, was banned from Australia as well. You know, it's just like, it's getting worse, and it is again, like, it really does seem to be the progressive agenda that's being fully cemented here, and I think that we need to talk about it.
Yeah, indeed, and we need to keep talking about it, and there will be alliances. See, something that I said a couple of years ago is I made a video titled "Allies Aren't Just for Leftists." I can't remember what the thing was even about now, but the point is that I think on the right we have tended to be, and I know that you're a centrist, but let's just say non-leftists have tended to have a certain attitude about allying with each other.
Before we go on, it's not just non-leftists, it's non-progressives. Because like I said, there are socialists who I'm actually quite friendly with. And I always have quite a good dig at Marxism with them on Twitter and stuff like this, you know, banter and stuff like that. But like, they're not, again, they're not like many people in the alt-right, they're not bad people. They just believe that this might work. And I disagree, and with the alt-right, I disagree, blah, blah, you know, and then there are aspects of the philosophy that I find immoral, so I can't commit to them and stuff like this. But even they are like, I mean, like the Communist Party of America was recently destroyed by identity politics. What's the chap, Maoist Rebel News, did a video on it that was actually really good the other day, where he was just saying the identity politics has literally destroyed this. It's torn it apart from the inside. All this talking about like white privilege and male privilege, blah, blah, blah. Even the commies aren't safe from this, you know? So it's just like, right, okay, then we're all finding ourselves on the raw end of an aggressive ideology that has basically put the heretics in rank with one another, as John Stuart Mill predicted. You know, I mean, on Liberty, he predicts that eventually all the heretics will find themselves in common cause. And that's what's happened. You know, we're all heretics to progressivism.
Yeah, I mean, I think that you and I would probably, we would disagree on the identity politics thing, because I see it as an inevitability at this stage. But I mean, regardless of whether you like or don't like it, I think it's just there now. But that's another matter. I think we certainly do agree that the progressive agenda as a totality is toxic and poisonous and very destructive and power mad. And I think we certainly all agree on that. And I think that this is the main thing. What I was going to say about allies is that I think that even though we do have disagreements, we have to recognize that we also have mutual enemies. We have common enemies who are going, they want to destroy us all, regardless of our disagreement. They don't even perceive or care about our disagreements. They see us all as one thing. And I think that unless we stand together, we are going to get trampled by these people, because they do have all the power just now. So I think that's something that needs to be emphasized, that even though we do have real disagreements, we also have real common enemies. And I think that a lot of people could do with understanding this. There is purity spiraling, and there is actually winning, and at least staying alive, staying relevant, and so on, staying functional. And I think that we do need to get a grip, basically, and be realistic about this.
Yeah, I mean, like you're saying, it's common interests. You know, we like. And it's not even like winning, it's just existing at this point is the challenge. And I genuinely mean that, you know, as people, I can't name a content creator who hasn't been deplatformed from somewhere, you know, that, like I probably can name one or two like milquetoast ones, but you know, like anyone who talks about politics with any degree of expertise or like intensity is generally deplatformed from somewhere at some point, you know, and it's just like, right, okay. And then you get the complete unpersonings. So, I mean, the time is not to be precious, unfortunately. It's now not the time to be precious about this, you know. I mean, I'm sick of it. Like, I don't care whether it's someone from the alt-right. I don't care whether it's a communist. I don't care whether it's a liberal or a gamer or whatever. Whoever it is, whatever groups, the furries, you know, the anime people, I don't care. These people shouldn't just be arbitrarily removed from the internet at the whim of an SJW. I'm sick of this. This has to stop. And again, like Trump, what are you doing? You know, I mean, Trump could just come out and say, right, okay, new initiative for 2019, an internet bill of rights. I'm going to do whatever I have to do to propose this to Congress and the Senate and whoever, you know, whatever the process is to go through. But this is what I'm going to push through. And this is the agenda. I'm setting it, because for future generations, they're going to need it. So, you know, let's do it.
And that I completely agree.
That would table the conversation. And any other world leader should do this too. Every other world leader should do this. Like Salvini, Orban, you know, Bolsonaro, who's actually becoming one of my favorite memes at this point. These people should also be saying, no, look, protection of the people, internet bill of rights, this isn't going away, it's the future. We need to have guaranteed protections for the people using it, even if they push the boundary of what we consider to be reasonable society.
Yeah, I totally agree. This does need to be something that we all push for. And I think we need to get very, like, much better at organizing and networking this kind of thing, so there's some amount of resistance to it. I think that we do absolutely need to establish freedom of speech on the internet, which you know, that covers everything. All these corporations, it should be illegal for them to reject a customer or whatever on the basis of that customer's political beliefs. That's simply ridiculous.
Well, if we do it on the basis of race and gender and things like that, why not? Why don't we do it on the basis of ideology? You know, why don't we protect that? You know, and if we don't protect that, then we end up creating this stagnant wasteland of monoculture and mono ideas. And that's inevitably going to create its own problems because of the things it doesn't cover. You know, you see the growth of like different ideologies and groups of ideas because of the needs of the people. You know, they like who are suffering from a problem that's not being addressed by the existing order, you know, and that's why these groups grow, and that's where they gain their strength. And so you kind of have to listen to them, because then you can identify, oh, there is X problem and these are the people who have it. And the bigger it gets, and the, you know, otherwise you end up with revolutions, you know, and that's not what we're supposed to have in a democracy. We're supposed to have like actual dialogue, actual like evolution of our society rather than a revolution.
Yeah, in theory, I mean, it would be nice if that were the way it worked and could be made to work. I would like that. The trouble is that we're up against people who don't seem to brook any dissent. They don't seem to accept this. It's very strange. The left have forgotten that for a long time they were the rebels in the end, or at least they just don't give a shit because they know that they're in control now, so who cares that other people are now in the position that they were in. I think that's the attitude, really. They simply don't care.
Yeah, I think they think they're in the home stretch. And I really do think it goes back to like Tim Cook's sort of messianic speech, because like they're acting like they have received wisdom from God. You know, oh no, this is the one truth. This is what's right. And anyone who opposes this is immoral. They're bad people. And it's like, can we not have a legit disagreement for a start? But B, are you sure this is the word of God? You know, why can't we just consider the other things that you won't listen to? And it's because, well, there's a contradiction there, and it shows that my ideology isn't consistent. Well, whose is? You know, whose ideology is perfectly consistent? Nobody's is. Nobody's ideology. You can go through every single one. Like, you can go through, socialism, does it really help the working class? Not really. You know, you've got all of these other things like white nationalism. Who is even white? That's a genuine question you'd have to answer. You'd sit there, you'd find yourself with all kinds of cross contradictions. Liberalism, free speech. Well, is there a limit to it? Well, maybe. If calling for violence, okay, well, that's already a contradiction. You know, every single one of these ideologies has a series of contradictions within it, but social justice is nothing but contradictions. The very nature of intersectionality, if you've got all of these, like, lines...
Well, it's good. Yeah, I mean, it's just the example is gays and Islam. How the fuck are you going to reconcile that? And we're also seeing it with the trans and feminism as well, which is very interesting.
Yeah, the TERFs are persona non grata these days. Like, I've seen TERFs deplatform from banks and stuff like this. They treat the TERFs with utter wrath. And it's just like an intersectionality, it creates a matrix of contradictions. And you can pick any one you want whenever it's convenient for you. You know, and someone else with more power can just pick a different series and then use that to flatten you. And you've got no, if you're just lower on the stack, you've got no argument against it. And it's just like, great, okay. Is that kind of predatory ideological game? Is how we want to run the world? I don't think so. I think it's a terrible idea.
Well, of course, but this is what happens when you encourage people to conceive of themselves as victims and nothing but victims of whoever has power. I mean, it's just an extremely unhealthy way to conceive of yourself. I suppose you probably should be wrapping up now. So do you want to go through the super chats? Should we
Let's do
through
it. Super chats? Yeah, okay. So sorry that I'm going to duck out a bit early, but I really want to get this video up because I'm seeing that narrative go everywhere and I'm sick of it. I'm absolutely, because Owen Jones is there like a bloody heroin addict mumbling his words going, and it's like, Owen, shut up. You know, so let's do it. Let's nail him.
Okay, let's go through it. I've done the, right, okay. Okay, don't you think it might be productive for you both to start talking about picking alt platforms, cryptocurrency, etc.? Our days are numbered here. Well, we have talked about other platforms, BitChute and Gab and so on.
Minds.
And Minds, of course. We'll see how it goes. I mean, I think it's good that these things exist in the meantime. I think they need to exist in order to mature, in order so that they are ready for a mass exodus from mainstream social media, which might well be forced upon us.
Yeah, I mean, like, I think at the moment what I do is run both, because I want to talk to the normies. You know, I want to explain to them that these things are going on. So I have to use mainstream social media. But obviously, we, you know, use the alternatives in parallel to that. And the good thing for any content creators out there, BitChute, they've got functionality on BitChute that I don't know how it works. But once, you know, once you set up an account, you can effectively connect it to your YouTube channel. And so when you upload a video to YouTube, it mirrors it automatically on BitChute. It's amazing. It's such convenience, you know. And with BitChute, it's a torrent sharing thing, if everyone wasn't aware. So
yeah, it's very clever that it works.
It's brilliant. I think it's the future of video streaming. But at the moment, the virtual monopoly is with YouTube. So, and they're being deplatformed by other people in Silicon Valley because, of course, they protect their own. So
yeah. So when you try to create your own platform, they sabotage that as well. Marvelous. Yeah.
So libertarians, that's a specific comment to you guys. You know, I love you guys, really do love the commitment to liberty. But at this point, the corporations are acting as a cartel. It's like a monopoly from Silicon Valley. At this point, what they're doing is not justifiable, and we have to use the government to step in. So,
yes. Okay, indeed. Okay, someone says, there is no easy way. We must put in the time, effort, and labor and make it happen. We will never convince our enemies to play fair. It's our job now. What would you say to
completely
that?
Agree. That's why I'm such a strong supporter of what Andrew Torba's doing with Gab. Like, when Gab was being attacked after... what was the shooter's name? I can't, the screw your optics, I'm going in guy. I can't remember his name.
I can't remember either, but the Pittsburgh synagogue thing.
Yeah, the synagogue shooting. When that happened, I think I made about 4 or 5 videos because Gab were being relentlessly attacked and effectively scoured from the internet by leftist activist groups like Deplatform Hate and things like this, very progressive intersectional groups. And Andrew tweeted at me after Patreon deleted my account, obviously, and said, in a few months' time, Gab is going to have their own payment processing thing. And when they do, I'm going to use it, you know, and I'll use that in parallel with Subscribestar. So whichever platform you prefer to support, you know, if you want to support me, you can support me on either one. So you can choose which platform you prefer to help out, you know. And again, like, diversifying is going to be essential, because what if one of these platforms is attacked by another progressive organization for some other bullshit reason? You know, so you've got to at this point. You don't really have a choice as a content creator or just user of these sites. But sorry, yeah, go on.
Oh, I was just agreeing with you. I would also say that I have also created a Subscribestar account. If anyone wants to support me, that would be greatly appreciated. But yeah, let's hope that does work. And also... indeed, Andrew Torba's thing about the payment processing, I hope he's aware of what other websites have gone through with payment processing, because he must be fully aware of the obstacles. So I hope that he does manage to pull it off. It would be very interesting. I mean, Gab would obviously be in the spotlight then on a long-term basis if they were a guaranteed safe place to do this stuff. Yes. A safe service to use, a reliable service to use. I think that would be fantastic.
Well, that was kind of why I was so sad about the demise of Maker Support, because it had a beautiful layout. It was very clean looking. You know, it was very easy.
It was kind of wholesome feeling. Like, I like the name and the sort of aesthetic. It was really, really good website.
Yeah, the thing is, because it had a feed, it eventually could have just replaced Twitter. You know, with an integrated sponsorship system and stuff like this. But sorry, let's carry on.
Yeah, the guy had lots of great ideas. I loved that website. It's such a shame.
I really liked it. Really liked it.
Okay, we'll move on. Someone says, I'm curious to hear Sargon's thoughts on the Murdoch video that featured him. Did he take it as somewhat collegial discourse or as an attack? Now, I think you haven't watched this video, but it was, it was an affectionate. It was an affectionate video about you. It wasn't an attack. I know for a fact that it wasn't.
I've seen, like, screenshots from it where it's just, like, this giant dopamine monster, and I'm just sort of like, I'm turning into an ascetic. I'm not the sort of person who goes around chasing dopamine highs. You know, so I don't really know what about
serotonin? Joke is. Oh, all right. Well, no, it was...
Serotonin?
I'm joking. It's to do with the video. No, honestly, it was not. It was a very good natured video about you, and it was amusing. But that was all to do with the situation at that time. was your spat with Spencer on that on the Warski stream. But no, it was a nice. It wasn't a vicious video at all. Okay, so someone else says the noose is tightening. Yeah, and now here's an interesting thing. This guy is perennially pessimistic, so you'll have to forgive his pessimism here. He says, Sargon, you say the march yesterday was productive, but what did it really achieve to actually stop the traitors? At best, UKIP might take a few seats from the Tories, giving Corbyn a bigger win. Now, that's a legitimate point. So let's address it.
It is, of course. I think a Corbyn government's inevitable at this point. I think there's just nothing we can do to stop it. Because Jeremy Corbyn, all he really needs to do at the moment is just keep his head down. You know, let the Conservatives continue to blow holes in their own feet until they've eventually blown off their own legs. And then Corbyn can go, well, the people voted for it. So I might have been a Remainer, but the people voted. And the thing is, he's not a Remainer. He's a Brexiteer. But he has to cover it because he has momentum. We're full of Remainers for some reason. But and again, you would think these people would be ardent Brexiteers, but they're not. But anyway, Corbyn just needs to keep his mouth shut while the Tories hang themselves. And he can just say, the people voted, and that's what I'm going to do. I don't agree with her deal, so I'm going to renegotiate. And if they don't want to come to the table, then I'm afraid I have no choice, and it's going to be rough, but socialism will save us, blah, 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 you know.
It would be funny if it turned out that he was actually better prime minister than he did be better things. Well, he couldn't be much worse, absolutely. But you know, obviously, it would come with Diane Abbott, which would be, you know, a damn shame. But anyway, go ahead. What about Jeremy Corbyn?
Well, Diane Abbott, actually, the other day on Question Time, which I think was the one where she was with Jordan Peterson, she actually said something I really agreed with. She was like, look, everyone's calling for a second referendum, but it might well go the other way, you know, and I think it will go the other way because I think people will be pissed off that they're being demanded that they should have another referendum. And even people who wanted to stay will, and she didn't say it this eloquently, obviously, but like she extrapolating her point was, the people who, even if they were kind of like soft Remainers, would now vote on principle that, no, we had the vote. We won't be treated like this. Now it's about, like, you know, personal and civic pride. You know, this is now, now we're citizens acting as citizens, and you're not doing what we said, whether we agree with it or not, really. And it's the principle of the thing. This system has to respond properly in the way that it's meant to. And it's not. It's a Brexiteer country and a Remainer parliament, and that has to change. But sorry, what was the first part of the question again?
It was what did the march yesterday achieve?
So I think the march was actually really productive. A show of force is always a productive thing when you're an activist. And when I mean show of force, obviously I don't mean violence. What I mean is a demonstration of voting power, you know, the sort of like the numbers of people you can pull into the street. Because then again, there were like, it was done at really short notice. It was something like 2 weeks before it was set up, 2 or 3 weeks, something like that. It was really short notice for what these things are. And thousands and thousands and thousands of people turned up, and it was amazing. Like, you'll see the footage of me. I'm just standing watching the guy, you know, the whole protest go past. It goes on for like 5 minutes of just people walking. You know, it was a really long. I've had to speed it up in the video I'm going to put up because it went on for ages. But the point is, like, activist movements, like any kind of activist movement, and at this point, like, if we just call the nationalist movement, demonstrating that the politicians who are resigning are cowardice because of Gerard Batten's appointment of Tommy as an advisor, not even joining UKIP just as an advisor. That's shown that they can't get a protest like that going, you know, or at least if they can, where is it, you know? And secondly, like it's a fun activity to do, you know, and it should. And the most productive thing about it. And I tell you what, they shot themselves in the foot every time. Like, there was no violence from the Brexiteers. There was only violence from the leftists, the Antifa types, and three of them were arrested. That is our moral cause. We were there civilly, lawfully, and we acted lawfully, and we all had fun as well, you know? Like, and it, again, a very much family gathering. On the other side, a bunch of angry commies who are starting fights with cops. That is a giant win. And the massive lies that they've been telling about it, I think, is a giant win. Again, we're not going to prevent a Corbyn government, so I think that's a flight of fancy.
Right, okay. Moving on, couldn't an EU army break Europe free from US control?
I don't think that Europe's being controlled by the US.
Right, okay. I mean, it's a very complex matter, so I'm not going to go into it now at the end of a hangout. Okay, the only way for the left to finish off what it wants to get done is to sunset people like us and gulag people who might agree with us.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I can't argue with the point there.
Yeah. All right. Okay, someone says, what happened to you, Sargon, was a goddamn disgrace. Evil people like to see people's lives destroyed if they don't bow to the Siliconian ideology.
Thank you, and I completely agree. I think there's a distinct moral deficit among the people who are engineering this situation and playing into it. Like, it's incumbent on everyone. Like, this is the thing, the intellectual dark web, all of the academics that make that up, have been very firm in my defense. And even Ben Shapiro tweeted out in my defense on this. And so it's like, right, everyone can recognize now they've come for the centrists, you know, and it's time to speak out because we, you know, they didn't do it when it was the alt-right, even though I did, you know, I said, don't deplatform these people. I will talk to them. Like, you know, and I can understand why they didn't, media pressure, all that. Fair enough. It's weak, but you've got to understand these people are soft, cloistered academics. You know, they're not hardcore culture warriors, you know, but now they've come for the centrists and they can see the writings on the wall as well. And everyone should. And we should all just, when it comes to the deplatforming thing, there should just be no disagreement. No, we're all on the same page. None of us should be deplatformed. And that way we can defend all of us. You know, everyone gets defended.
Yeah, I totally agree. And on that note, let's end it, because that's a good place to end. All right, so thank you very much. Hope you've enjoyed this, Sargon.
I've had a great time, man. I enjoy having these chats. I genuinely do. I'm sorry that like the leftists are going to sit there and yell things and then take action against us for just, you know, having a civil conversation. But thank you very much for inviting me. And if you would care to invite me again next year, I would definitely attend.
Well, it's a nice tradition to uphold. So, I'd love to have you on again next year, assuming that we're both still, active next year. But touch wood.
Jesus, yeah.
Yeah. All right, let's leave it at that. Cool. I don't want to tempt fate. Okay, so thank you very much, Sargon of Akkad. I hope you've all enjoyed this at home. And, it was a nice one. I enjoyed this. It's very productive. All right, so I'll see you again in about 40 minutes with the next one. Hope you're enjoying Millennial. See you soon.